You're listening to Shared Security, a podcast that explores the trust you put in people and technology. Hosted by Tom Esten, Scott Wright, and Kevin Johnson. Welcome to episode 294 of the Shared Security Podcast. And joining me this week, our co-host, Scott, would you like to play a game? Right. And co-host, Kevin, would you like a pen test? Johnson. And I will say test.
Oh, yeah. Because that way it could be cybersecurity or an actual pen.
You never know. It could be actually testing the quality of the pens that you create.
None of the pen tests I test that aren't mine. Do you remember? Oh my gosh, what was his name? Why am I blanking on his name? The dude that did the new methodology for pen testing at Nauticon.
Oh, that was Matt Neely.
Matt Neely, thank you. I don't know why. I totally blanked on his name. And we all sat there waiting for him to switch from testing writing pens to talking, and his entire hour presentation was a methodology of how to evaluate writing pens.
Yes. At a security conference. It was probably the best talk. One of the best talks. It's in my top five list of best
I love
talks.
That talk. It was such a good talk.
I'm going to link that actually, because it's somewhere out there on YouTube.
Oh yeah, it's got to be, right?
That in the show notes.
Matt's
amazing.
A great guy, but that one, I remember sitting in that talk waiting for him to switch from, well, if you hold the pen consistently as you write, and it was like, oh my gosh, this is awesome.
It's so good. So,
man. At least I was hoping you could have used a vocoder when you were introducing me, Tom. Would you like to play a game?
I didn't have enough time because I came up with that about 5 minutes before I jumped on this. So
still, but that is a great idea. 95% high marks, A+. Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you.
When is Bishop Fox going to become a cardinal?
That's a great question.
That was just a random. It popped into my head. It came out of my mouth. I'm sorry.
I don't even know what to do with that. But I'm gonna think about that and get back to you. So,
Catholic bishops, the next level up. If I remember correctly, the very next level is cardinal. Okay. And then the cardinal is actually elect the pope.
But where's the fox? Yeah.
Well, Bishop Fox.
Bishop.
What does the fox say?
Yes.
Okay, I'll shut up now.
Can we do a show
podcast?
Yeah. So we're here to talk about some of the top stories going on in the cybersecurity community. And the first one, we're going to talk about CACBOT. So CACBOT botnet was dismantled by the FBI, which, if you don't know, infected about 700,000 computers across the world, just 200,000 alone in the United States. And what's fascinating about this story is that what the FBI did was, once they gained control of the infrastructure, they actually sent an uninstaller out to all of those computers that were infected by the botnet. So, and the FBI actually stated that's the first time they have ever done something like that on this massive scale. Mm.
Wasn't Microsoft the one that did this also previously? Like, they pushed
something like that. Yeah.
It seemed nervous. I thought it was the FBI, but when you said the first time the FBI did it, then I started thinking maybe it was Microsoft. Here's the issue I have with this.
You have an issue?
I know. Me? Never. I don't know where I stand on this.
Okay.
Oh my God.
Why?
Part of me says, man, that's awesome. I'm glad they did that. Clean those things up. Dirty malware, right? And then part of me says, wait, the FBI ran software on 700,000 machines?
Okay, I see where you're going.
Right, like
it's a little bit of a slippery slope.
No, I won't use that term. But like, okay. And while I would like to believe that the installer would not cause a problem on that medical device control system.
They pushed it out.
Yeah. Right? I don't know. Where is the line that says that the FBI is allowed to run code on, because now, okay, now the next question. Okay, so the FBI is allowed to do this, and I know, Scott, say slippery slope, and I'll go with it this time. But like, okay, the FBI stops me for some reason. I don't know. The FBI is now doing drug stops. I don't know. And they run code on my phone because I connect to some service that they have control of mm-hmm. now. Does that violate the rule that they have to have a warrant to search things? Like,
I think it's okay if they had good intent.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Yeah, protect and serve.
You trust the government, of course.
Yeah.
What could they possibly do?
I'm not even getting into the FBI secretly pushing mm-hmm. other malware down. Like, I'm not even getting to that point. I'm just, like, the idea of the FBI just arbitrarily running code on 700,000 machines.
Yep.
That inherently bothers me. And it's not just the FBI.
No, that's fair.
I'd have a problem if the Department of Health decided to run code on 700,000.
Well, even in an organization like an enterprise that has 700,000 computers to push out its software to, you kind of expect a bit of a vetted process, right? So we don't know what process or authorization was given to do that. So
yeah.
And I'm not, like, that's why I say is I don't know where I stand on this one. But I think I lean toward not liking the government running random software on 700. I think I fall on that side.
I agree. I don't think that surprises me. No, I think that's fair.
It probably shouldn't. Well, if you paid any attention to me, I mean, yesterday I was called a socialist leftist liberal on Facebook.
You? But, oh my gosh. Are you serious?
I was called it because I said Nazis should be punched. And, which I thought was not political. I didn't believe that punching Nazis was a left-right thing. But I lean away from having the FBI just run arbitrary. And I know that it's not arbitrary, and I'm sure that the FBI is not who did it, that they worked with a company, like maybe.
They worked with a couple partners and other governments. I mean, it wasn't just the FBI, to be fair.
Yeah, right. I don't know. Don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess my question is, okay, here's, I think this is a halfway decent analogy. Would we be okay if the FBI or any police department, if the police department responded to a call that somebody broke into your house, and while they were in there, they rearranged your file cabinet? I know it's a stretch. But we would not be okay with that, right? That would require a warrant. That would require
a search. Yeah, a search warrant, sure. Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. I think. I'm not a lawyer. I pretend to be one on Twitter or X or whatever the hell alphabet we're going to use today. You see what I'm saying? I don't know.
I think so.
What do you think, Scott?
I think, I just on a whole different angle of looking at this. I think as skilled as these guys are, you know, I was going to call them Quackbot. I didn't know you call them Cackbot.
Anyway, it was Quackbot also.
Oh, good. Okay.
I thought it was Cackbot.
Well, no, you're probably right.
Yeah.
I don't deal with malware anymore.
I don't know. Yeah. One of our listeners will correct us.
Anyway, my feeling is these same villains, bad guys, will be back again with better disaster recovery and protection against insider. And protection against insider attacks.
You're right.
There you go. There you go. Well, great segue, Scott, into our favorite segment of the week, which is Aware Much.
You know, I've recorded that and I play it as a white noise sound as I'm going
to help you fall asleep at night.
Yeah.
That's really scary.
Tis the time for that mysterious encounter with human vulnerability that we call Aware Much. So today we're highlighting a story about QR codes, which we haven't talked much about before. Yeah, we have. We've talked about them several times. But there's an interesting twist in this one. An unnamed energy organization. I don't know if that like energy drink or Department of Energy or I don't know.
Yeah.
But
energy company. Energy company, I believe. Yeah,
has been the target.
Monster.
I know. I was thinking that. So some energy organization has been the target of phishing emails with QR code images as attachments. And you kind of wonder how that works, but It's not like they're just randomly placing QR codes on a parking meter to overlay the legitimate codes with malicious stickers. This time, the pretext is coming in an email that tells people that they need to verify their ID by scanning the QR code in the attachment with their phone. And it might seem silly that you'd be asking people to do that, but it vaguely resembles a situation where you're often asked to scan a QR code to register for a new multi-factor authentication account on an authenticator app. So it's not too far-fetched. I think it's going to catch some people doing that.
Oh, totally.
Sure. Yeah. So the sneaky thing is that the QR codes can actually bypass URL scanning for now, because as far as we know, there aren't too many email gateways that are scanning for QR codes, but there could be, and I expect they will be in the future. But for now, you know, just as with links, some bad ones will get through, right? So people will be subject to these things. So what do you guys think? Are we meager humans just unable to protect ourselves from these things, or what do you think?
I think this is just another variation on how to use a QR code for malicious intent, right? I mean, Kevin, you and I have talked about this for, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, is it going on a decade and a half or something, even longer?
It's actually funny. I believe it was at the exact same Nauticon that we were discussing
Matt's talk that you and I
gave a talk on QR codes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like then like Nauticon QR codes, 9 or something.
Yeah, and they weren't used as prolific as they are today.
No. Matter of fact, a number of people in the talk were like, what is this thing? I haven't heard of this thing, right? So QR codes don't scare me. I think the thing that I find most fascinating about this is I cannot think of a use case where somebody would send me legitimately an email that had a QR code attached to it. The only example I can come up with is that I seem to recall salespeople including it in their signature line. Like, here's a QR code to get to my LinkedIn profile or something like that, right?
Yeah.
But I can't think of a legitimate reason to say to a user,
I can think of one.
Here's a graphic. Scan this QR code from this email. Okay, what's the one you thought of?
I mean, it's legitimate, but it's maybe a stupid one, but it is legitimate. That is, it's imagine that a service that you subscribe to wants you to open your app on a phone or their app on a phone, right? So,
oh yeah, that's a good one. Yes, yeah. Yes. Like, hey, don't use our website. Scan this code and run our mobile app.
Yeah.
That's a damn good one. Mm-hmm. I had not thought of that. Scott, that's a good one. I like it. I'm impressed.
All right. Well, I'm glad I impressed Kevin today. That's awesome.
That wasn't, no, like, like, I guess that's the wrong way to phrase it. I mean, I am impressed. I mean it as, that sounds like I'm saying, well, Scott, you don't impress me much. Not, and that one did. And that's really not what I mean. That was not a backhanded compliment.
It's all good.
You started it by saying, this is probably a stupid idea. And I think that's the exact opposite. I think that is the exact way you're going to get people is doing it that way. I think that's as far from stupid idea as you can get.
Well, thank you for that. So this is a timely topic because tomorrow, September 6th, which will obviously be in the past for people listening to this podcast.
Back to the future.
But the Cybersecurity Awareness Forum that we do every other Wednesday will actually be discussing beyond phishing links. Like, what else do employees need to learn about? So my guess is QR codes will be one of those things that we talk about tomorrow. So if you missed the session, you can go to ClickArmor's YouTube channel and look for the Cybersecurity Awareness Forum playlist, where we've got 25 sessions that have been recorded at least. And anybody's welcome to join them. It's clickarmor.ca/CSAF. And this segment was brought to you by ClickArmor, the original gamified security awareness training platform specifically designed to help with things like remediation and having a high level of engagement and interactivity with people. Think about all the people who fail phishing tests or who have in some way been assessed as needing remediation, whatever that means. But we know there's always people in an organization who don't really learn from whatever you're putting them through in the first place. So why not try ClickArmor's interactive courses and see what a difference it makes when you can engage people to learn the things that they missed the first time around. So instead of doing more frequent phishing tests or sending people back to take the same training that got them there in the first place, give it a try. Clickarmor.ca.
So did you know that there is a tool out there on Telegram? I know you both use Telegram profusely, I'm sure, just like I do. But maybe because criminals can now dox anyone for about $15 through a tool that's available through some, say, shady Telegram channels out there.
And we could explain to people if they're not familiar what doxing is.
Yeah. So doxing is a, let's just call it an attack or a technique, types of techniques where people find and dig up information about an individual or individuals, and then they publish that personal information. It can be, you know, addresses, previous places they've lived,
passwords,
sensitive information. Yeah. It could be all kinds of things to discredit an individual, essentially. And sometimes these doxing attacks are politically motivated. Sometimes they're just revengeful type of things. And often they go after celebrities and, you know, people that have a lot of money that they may be trying to extort or blackmail or things like that. So that's kind of what doxing is. But I found this article fascinating. And just to preface this, I recommend everyone check out this site. It's 404 Media. This is actually former journalists from Vice that had, I think they left or got laid off. I'm not really sure. But one of the author of this research, Joseph Cox, he's done a ton of really great research in the past, as well as these other journalists that are on 404 Media. So I definitely recommend people check that out. This story was also fascinating because it kind of talks about the issue that we have with the credit card bureaus. This one in particular is TransUnion. And there's something known as credit header information, which is made available to many different third parties, including law enforcement, private investigators, all kinds of these data brokers. And what these criminals have found is that they've essentially gained access to these third-party services to get this credit card header information, which can reveal lots of sensitive information about an individual. I mean, think about, you know, your own credit, like, and all the things that you've purchased or financed or all of those things. Extremely valuable, right? And can definitely do damage to someone that, you know, is a victim of doxing. So what do you guys think of this? Is this another call for, hate to say, more regulation? Because the article does talk about that, right? Is, you know, there could be, they mentioned like GLBA, Graham-Leach-Bliley Act, which is what is the basis of regulation for the banking industry. And there's all kinds of weird loopholes in that regulation that allow this type of header information to be sent. So I just think of that law in particular seems outdated to me.
I don't even get what the whole service is trying to do with. I mean, it sounds like, is that a legitimate part of the Telegram service? Yes. It is.
Absolutely.
So why would they, why would they offer that? What is it?
Well, it's to basically provide organizations a way to validate somebody's credit, right?
Like over Telegram? That's weird.
Hmm. Well, no. To the Telegram channels are leveraging through a bot.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're going out to the APIs.
These third-party services and then pulling this information back. So they pay, you know, in Bitcoin to these criminals, which is about $15, and then you can get information from really anybody in America.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
This is one of the cases where I think regulation is the only way you're going to fix it.
Probably.
But having said that, you're not actually going to fix it. Right.
You're right.
So TransUnion gets regulated to the point where they're not allowed to have this. Okay. Right off the bat, you're causing problems for people who are trying to get loans and whatever, and like the legitimate uses of those APIs. And I'm not saying that outweighs the risk. I don't know. But that data is available through Israeli companies and German companies and
it's all over the
whatever,
place.
Right. So I mean, this is the data broker issue. You know, we can pick on credit bureaus here, and they're fun to pick on because I've always been blown away by the fact that we accept that a company collects data about us and then we have to pay them to see what they've collected.
Isn't that crazy?
About
that
us.
I know.
So stupid, yeah.
But that's just, you know, Kevin. I mean, this data is out there. How are we putting this back in the box?
Right. Because, even if you do regulate it, like there's the one example of one of the criminals gained access to a private investigator and stole his credentials, ironically, right, in Florida, and used their credentials to gain access to the data and then resell it. So how do you stop that?
Yeah. And the problem is, there are legitimate reasons to collect this type of data. And I'm not even going to the marketing aspect, right? Yes. There are legitimate reasons. What my health insurance company, which I don't have a problem sharing, is Aetna, right? Aetna has more information about me than I would like people to have, right? And there is a good reason for Aetna to have that data, right? Like it's not just now, don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that they don't collect more data than maybe they should, whatever. But knowing my name, knowing my address, knowing my social, knowing my date of birth, knowing my medical records are all legitimate things for Aetna to have. They're all legitimate things for Athena Health to have, which is what my doctor's office uses. So no matter how much we regulate the data brokers, regulate the TransUnions and the Experians, Athena Health is going to have that data. And if somebody logs in as Dr. Leah, who is amazing and awesome, they have access to that same information. Where is the line? And in my head, if we regulate or try to change the privacy aspects for TransUnion, all we're going to do is move the attacker's focus over to the people who have legitimate rights. And then we'll be having this exact same conversation. So I feel like I'm saying there isn't a solution. My answer is I don't know what the solution is, but it's why I live my life as if all my data is public, which is not a good answer for anybody else.
I think part of the solution is regulation, but that's not the complete solution. It's going to take the credit agencies to actually change as well. It's interesting.
Well, and I will say that for the most part, I think that credit agencies have been worse for us than better, right? Yes, the banks are more comfortable loaning money to somebody who has high credit, but what the credit agencies have done is driven the need for credit. I mean, like the idea that I worked my hardest to pay off all my debts.
True.
And my credit score went down because I didn't owe money.
It's almost like we need to have the downfall of capitalism, basically.
if we could just make me rich first and then the downfall of capital, I'm okay with it.
Isn't there somebody whose throat we could punch, though, just for fun?
He just wanted me to say throat punch. Yeah, I know. Thank you, Scott.
No, those are developers, Scott.
Oh, okay.
No, not all developers.
No. As Kevin is Nazis? Running for the OWASP board of directors, he can't say he's going to throat punch developers anymore.
But Nazis, all Nazis should be throat punch.
Nazis can be throat punch.
I watched a video of Nazis walking down the street, and there was a guy in a car that was filming out of his car, and all I could think of was, that dude could have just turned to the right and handled so many of those Nazis.
It's a crazy world we're living in. All right. Well, with that, I think that's all we have time for this week. But thank you both for
joining
us.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you, as always. And we will speak again next week. Thanks for watching or listening to this episode. Please subscribe wherever you like to listen to podcasts and visit us at sharedsecurity.net or on X, formerly known as Twitter, at SharedSec. If you'd like to help support the podcast and get early access to new episodes with no ads, plus many more exclusive benefits, become an official supporter of the podcast for only $5 a month. Visit sharedsecurity.net/supporter for more details.